the only thing you want to make sure of is that you're in on all the conversations. You're in on the Zoom meetings and the webinars and everything else. So the conference calls, the inspections, so that you can learn as much as you can learn.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
This is the Multifamily Money Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. What's going on, everybody? I'm your host, Sean Winslow. On today's episode, we have another great interview with a friend. His name is Tate Seymour. Tate is based in Utah. Tate started off as a photographer when he first moved to Utah. Outdoors guy, skiing, biking. So photography drew him in. But then he realized he wanted more than real estate drew him in. At first, you know, he was a real estate agent. He did fix and flips. And then he started doing more longer-term hold. He bought some smaller multifamily units. And that's kind of when he saw the light. He had that epiphany, that revelation, the true way to build passive income, true way to build the life you want in. To really build legacy wealth is through multifamily, bigger multifamily and buy and hold strategy. He went all in, and that's all Tate does now. Currently speaking, right now, he has somewhere north of 300 units of multifamily. And on this episode, we talk about a lot of great things. He gives a lot of great tips and tricks for any type of real estate investor. We get into one of the most important things, I believe, is building commercial broker relationships. Really fostering strong relations with these brokers because they will bring you the deals. They will bring you the best deals. They will bring you off-market deals. So Tate goes into some tips and tricks that have worked for him. I can tell you that I know he has some great relationships with brokers that have brought him great deals. One of the reasons why he's at 300 plus units. We also talk about another important thing, which is your best deals sometimes are the ones you walk away from. So he touches on that, talks about a deal that he ended up walking away from. And he thinks it's one of the best decisions he made. And I agree with him. Now he's at over 300 units. I'm sure he doesn't even think about that deal. So this is one that you're going to want to tune in and take some notes. All right, let's get into it.
Hey, everybody. Let's welcome Tate to the show. This is Tate Seymour, good buddy of mine. And yeah, how's it going today, Tate?
Fantastic. Stoked to be here. Thanks for having me and looking forward to this.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day to jump on here. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Happy to, anytime.
So let's just get into it. I guess give the listeners just a quick overview of where you're from, how you started, and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, just real quick, originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, had a very typical kind of that time middle class, upper middle class, a sort of upbringing was still pretty sweet, and especially in a lot of those Midwestern towns. I lived on a cul-de-sac on an acre of land with a stream that ran through the backyard, and had a really great childhood with a lot of support from teachers and parents, and really was entrepreneurial from as long as I can remember, and really loved working. I just loved working and making my own money as early as I could. And age 14, I was working two different jobs. My parents were driving me around, and I don't know if they'd let me do that these days. But anyway, yeah. So long story short, I ended up moving out here to Salt Lake City, Utah in 1999 to ski. Never considered real estate until about 2006 when a friend of mine got into an investment course that just taught you how to flip single family homes. And you learn things about like the cap rate equation but just basic investment fundamentals, right? So he was in it, and he had bought triplex in a really great part of town and was super excited about it. And I basically was like, I got to go learn about this. This sounds awesome. I was a professional photographer at the time. I was a ski photographer and weddings and portraits, did quite a bit of both of those, all of those rather. And did a lot of family portraits as well. But it was quite a grind financially to be a professional photographer and have the standard of living that I wanted to have as far as revenue and income and that sort of thing. So I jumped into real estate investing head first and I flipped a duplex, was my first deal. I bought a duplex that I lived in for a while. And then I flipped a few single family houses, got my license, started helping few other investors do the same thing that I was doing. And then the crash happened, and I was kind of a little burnout anyway. Wasn't having a huge amount of success for the amount of work I was putting in. And so when the crash happened, I kind of went a whole different direction, went back to photography. And then in 2012, the markets kind of started to recover. And my best friend and longtime business partner at the time said, hey, how about flipping some houses? We got back into it, did okay through the expanding market here in Utah, flipping single family houses, probably ended up doing about 40 projects in 8 years or so. And really in the last 2 years have scaled our business and specifically scaled our mindset and our business model and what our goals are. And we've really entered the multifamily space with like a lot of momentum and a lot of velocity. And we can talk about specific deals and whatnot, but that's really in a nutshell, like a real quick version of how we got to where we are today. Love this space and can talk about it all day long. So yeah, let's dig into it.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for sharing that. Your story kind of reminds me of mine, where growing up in a neighborhood back when kids actually played outside, great time to grow up, in my opinion. Yeah. And similar kind of trajectory in the sense of my career didn't start off in real estate either, but I was just naturally drawn to it and saw the power of multifamily, which kind of leads to how we met.
Yeah.
For the listeners, Tate and I met at a mastermind, or actually, excuse me, a kind of an educational seminar on multifamily that led into a mastermind. This is Corey Peterson's mastermind. And I don't want to speak for Tate, but for me, I was just naturally drawn to Tate, as you know, he likes the outdoors. He likes to ski like I do. And obviously the multifamily thing as well. So we kind of drawn to each other. And so we ended up partnering on a deal together. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about with the listeners, because the ending of the deal might not be what you typically want when you go into a deal, but I think sometimes the best deal you do is the one you don't. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on the deal and specifically how you found the deal, because I think the ways you kind of build broker relations and get deal flow coming is really ninja. So if you could just touch on that, that would be awesome.
Sure. Yeah. This deal that you and I did, as an example, did come from a broker relationship that we had with a broker in Albuquerque who we just spent some time talking to, networking with, and eventually meeting with in person. And it was an on-market deal, but he brought it specifically to us and kind of told us what he would do, how he would do it, what he felt like the upside was. And he even brought us some financing, which we didn't end up using, which in retrospect, we probably should have, because it was really good, cheap financing and a local bank, et cetera. So, but that's how we found this deal. It was really, this is not at all a complicated game, or there's not a whole lot of complexity to this, finding this particular deal. And really, there can be a lot of complexity finding deals specifically with the sellers, direct to seller. And we can talk about that a little bit too. But with this deal, it's just a matter of having this relationship in place and having him know specifically what we were looking for and how we were going to be able to perform on it, and that we were going to be able to perform on it. And so he trusted us that we could get the deal done. He brought us the deal and said, hey, this is something maybe you guys should think about. And so we ended up putting it under contract and kind of went from there. The rent growth was good in Albuquerque. It's a very unique market. The economics are supported by the nuclear weapon industry, basically. So the last few years with current government and priorities around military growth and those sort of things has really supported the economy of Albuquerque. And so there's more PhDs per capita in Albuquerque than anywhere else in the country, et cetera, et cetera. So rents were growing pretty nicely there. The path of progress that we were in was pretty good line of progress between the downtown area and the airport area, and was an area that had a lot of growth in the future going on with some pretty significant large developments around there.
Right. I believe there was a parcel of land. Well, I know there was a parcel of land right across the street. I believe it was around 7 acres.
It was,
and the city had already approved and the funding was already there. And they were going to build a public park area, including a soccer field, a fire department, a police department. And that was right across the street from the property. Path of progress was going to be there within a couple of years. So that was another reason we loved it. And Tate touched on rent growth in Albuquerque. Well, at the time, and keep this all considered, this was right before the pandemic of 2020 hit. And at the time, growth rates or rental rates in Albuquerque were number two in the entire country, only behind Phoenix, Arizona.
So yeah. That's
another reason why we loved the deal at the time. But then, like I mentioned, the pandemic hit, and that was right around when you and I were there for a due diligence.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I remember we did a quick little podcast episode in our Airbnb when we were there in Albuquerque for that, because that was the day, I think, or the day before, or the day after, rather, that the market crashed. What was it? Like, was it 3,000 points in one day or something crazy like that? So, and there was so much uncertainty around what we were dealing with and what we were looking at with the virus. And it was before people started wearing masks. It was before I heard the term social distancing. Mm-hmm. It was just all that was so new. So, you know, to cut to the chase on how the deal worked out, we basically got to the point of our financing deadline, our financing contingency deadline, where our earnest money would have become non-refundable. And literally, pretty much by the day, the COVID crisis hit really hard. And I'm sure everybody remembers right there at the beginning when a lot of the banks were changing their financing terms significantly, and out of the blue, there was the stimulus package that was pretty immediate. And then, of course, just tons and tons of fear around if tenants were going to keep paying rent, if banks were going to defer mortgages, et cetera. So with this deadline staring at us, we had to look at, are we going to be able to close this thing?
Right. And even we also were thinking, even not even about the close necessarily, but our fiduciary duty to our investors, because we were hearing things like renters are not going to have to pay the rent, but you can't evict them. But we also don't know if you're going to get any reprieve on your debt, on your loans. So we were just like, whoa, 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 like what's going on? They were obviously, everyone knows, they were making it sound like the sky was falling.
Right.
And also the financing part kind of saved us in the end, because like you said, we had that financing contingency in the contract, and we had agency debt, Freddie to be exact. And they came back to us and asked for 12 months interest reserves, if I remember correctly.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, at the end of the day, between the loan fees and the due diligence and some travel and legal fees, but mainly the loan fees and the legal fees, we were into this project over $30,000 in due diligence expenses. And we were lucky enough that the seller had a guy who was kind of in backup position that wanted to buy the place really badly. And he had like a 50% down payment, had really good financing, and had a pretty good certainty of close factor that we just didn't have. So everybody had an interest in putting him in first position, because they were willing to reimburse us most of our due diligence expenses, which turned out to happen. They ended up closing the loan and got us $25,000 in our due diligence expenses back to us in addition to our earnest money. And so it wasn't a huge loss financially, and it was a great education because we got so far down the road. We walked literally every single unit, all 44 units. We got bids for everything. We had an LLC in place with a pitch deck. You have your pitch deck there, Sean?
Yeah.
So that was our pitch deck, which is just a brochure that we gave to potential investors. That cost hundreds of dollars to design and print. So we basically bought an apartment building without closing on it.
Right.
You know,
and we had a PPM done by the lawyers, which for those of you that aren't familiar with the term, is a private placement memorandum. It's something that has to be created if you syndicate a deal, and that's thousands of dollars in attorney fees as far as you can get down the road before closing.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So at the end of the day, after COVID now, there's not really any part of me that wishes we were owners of that building. And well, there's a couple reasons. One is, I don't think we still know what the effects of COVID are going to be in 6 months, for instance, if we continue to get flare-ups around certain places, and especially if we go into flu season and things aren't good, and we start to have some heavy economic factors Albuquerque in Class C housing is, I mean, it would probably do okay, but would also probably be fairly rough.
Right. That wasn't our investment objective. So it wasn't to keep it as is. So.
Right. Exactly. And the other thing is I had a talk with this guy, kind of talked some sense into me one day. He said, look, what's Albuquerque going to like and look like in 20 years versus what's Salt Lake City going to look like in 20 years? And this was a Chicago-based investor. And he was basically saying, look, the upside of Salt Lake City is so massive. And all the economists point to just significant future growth. Our metrics are so solid here. We've got really good job diversification, including lots of tech. And it's just a solid place to be. And he's right. Like in 20 years, our population will have, I don't even know, doubled maybe or come close to that. And it's going to be lots and lots of infill projects and lots of apartments. And they're not building any more Class C apartments. So whatever Class C projects we can do, we know are going to be pretty risk mitigated because they are in such high demand. Right. That level of housing is in high demand and projects like that are in high demand from investors. At the end of the day, I think we'd be fine if we owned that place. I think our investors would be fine, but it wouldn't have been short term of a deal as we thought. We probably would have had to hold it longer for it to really pay off.
Right. Because who knows if we'd be able to, cause what we really wanted to do was turn some of the units and then obviously turn some of the tenants with everything that's going on. That time frame, you're right, would have been really pushed out and that would have changed the whole investment profile of the deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. So I'm really glad we did it at the end of the day. If somebody had said, would you sign up to do this deal and lose $5,000, I wouldn't have signed up, but we did it and we learned a ton. We got some really great connections. We learned a lot about the legal side of things. And
I'll put it this way. You've probably paid $5,000 for a seminar before, right?
Oh yeah. Yep.
This is the best seminar you can get.
Yep. Yeah. Literally worth years of education.
Exactly. Sure. I'm happy I went through it with you just for that sense that the learning experience, there's nothing like actually doing it and seeing how things go down. Yep. And hey, there's going to be more deals for us to do together in the future.
Yeah. And it just gets back to the point of go find a deal. If you don't know how to get started and you don't have any money, and you have a little bit of time, do the mentorship thing. If you need to pay for a mentorship or a mastermind, do that. Whatever it takes to get you to a point that you can go out and find deals and put deals under contract, go find a deal, put it under contract with and leverage your mentor to do that. And then take that to your mentor or to somebody else that's going to take the ball and run with it and get 10% of the deal or 15% of the deal and learn. And just the only thing you want to make sure of is that you're in on all the conversations, you're in on the Zoom meetings and the webinars and everything else. So the conference calls, the inspections, so that you can learn as much as you can learn. And that's really the invaluable thing. And then to also be able to say on your resume, hey, I had partners in 100 units or 40 unit or whatever it ends up being. That's huge. That takes your career real far down the road.
Tate, that's great advice. Usually at the end of the show, I ask for an action item. If something you could prescribe the listeners to do that they had to do for the next 30 days to further their career or their life, what would it be? And I think you just told them that.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more with what you just said. There's a lot of new people in the business that they bring a deal, like you said, to a mentor or someone that's already in the business, and they'll ask for 50%. Well, what's the value in that person of giving up 50%? They're already doing their own deals. Take less to learn. So then later on down the road, you can get 50%+ on your own.
Yeah. What's better, 10% of a $2 million deal or 50% of no deal, right?
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
It's got to work for the person that you're learning from, the mentor, of course. And like I said, there's just all of a sudden, if you have 50 doors under your belt that you're even 10% partner in, you can tell a broker or a banker or an investor, I've got 50 units that I'm partners in. That's huge. That is huge. Mm-hmm. So you're doing yourself a huge favor. The other action item I would say is go download. If you don't have an Audible account, first of all, you should, and there's 50 books on there that are mandatory listening. And I would say that the book, How to Make Big Money in Small Apartments by Lance Edwards, is a must listen for anyone that wants to be in this industry or is in this industry in the multifamily space. It's a fantastic overview of the whole game, what it takes, what your focus should be, what your focus shouldn't be, and hint, property management is not what your focus should be.
Amen to that.
Sneak preview. And he does a fantastic job with mindset, which is something we haven't really gotten into today, but is, in my opinion, about 80% of this game is what you believe that you can do and what you believe you can achieve and the resources that you know that you have and how resourceful you are. So the mindset piece is massive, massive, massive. And Lance does a really good job of kind of bringing all those together. He's a Texas guy. He's got a deep Texas accent and he reads the book himself on Audible, and it's really, it's really enjoyable for sure.
Well, thanks for adding that, Tate. And I agree with you on the mindset. Usually the book that I recommend a lot, the one that I recommend the most, is Mindset by Carol Dweck. And I think I've told this one to you before.
Yep.
She goes into fixed versus growth mindset and how it can completely change the outcome of your life. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I've got that in my library and I haven't cracked it yet, but it's in there. Yeah, I will.
All right, Jay. Sure. Well, thank you for your time, but where can the listeners find you?
Yeah, so my company is called Greenlight Equity Group, and our website is glequitygroup.com. So G is in George, L is in Larry, the word equity group.com. And my phone number, you can just reach right out to me, 801-699-4532. I will take anybody's call anytime and help out any way that I can. I'm very powerfully related to my purpose and my mission here, which is to educate and inspire people and to really lift people up as I become more and more successful, to bring more and more people along for the ride.
Well, thanks for that, Tate. Well, if anyone hits him up in the winter, you can find him at Snowbird.
That's right.
Treading those slopes.
Yeah, Sean, we got to get you out here, man.
Yes, I'll be out next year.
For sure.
COVID kind of put a kibosh on that at the end of the season.
No doubt.
Thanks for your time, Tate. It's always a pleasure.
You bet, Sean. For sure. Anytime.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.